Christina, to you first, I suppose the inevitable question more than 24 hours on from any budget is, any landmines, any banana skins in the budget so far?
Yeah, well, I suppose it was quite a significant budget in terms of the amount of money that was being spread around. A few things have come up, I suppose, today. For Norma Foley, the Education Minister, big focus seems to be on these pouches that the department is proposing that every school will have to basically take mobile phones away from students. This was obviously part of Fianna Fáil's big move to get, you know, schools phone free. So there's been a big focus on that from the opposition side. I think it's 9 million euro was designated in the budget for that. Now, we don't really have the details exactly how it would work, whether that's all four pouches or lockers or storage units that would be used to store the phones. But obviously there's a kind of a hyper focus on, you know, the spending of public money from the opposition, and questions being asked whether this is the right way to spend such a significant amount of money. We've also had, I suppose, housing charities and homeless charities coming out saying they didn't really feel that for the government to be saying that housing is the number one priority, that there was any big win for them really in this budget announcement. Obviously Dara Bryan would say different, you know, saying he's pumping a lot of money into the LDA, that the Housing for All will continue. So I suspect they might be holding their cards close to their chest in terms of, you know, these revised housing targets, which we expect to get released next month. And will we see any sort of, you know, bigger ideas when it comes to housing on that side of things?
And individual ministers leaving themselves room perhaps to address some of the other concerns when the veil is lifted on what the individual departmental spending plans are revealed in the next week or so. Is that it?
Yeah, I think there's, you know, we've had the press conferences today outlining some of their budget wins. I think there is, you know, somewhat perhaps management of the news cycle in terms of how they want to flag how their department will have significant gains or wins here. So, you know, these are sort of the end of the press conferences now today and tomorrow, and we are getting a bit more detail into what each individual department will be spending their money on over the next year. But obviously, I think all of this raises the question in terms of election timing and Apple tax money. Those are still the things that are sort of floating over the heads, I think, of people in Leinster House at the moment.
All right. I think Pascal Donoghue, in his speech yesterday, kind of preempted criticism by the Fiscal Advisory Council when he got up to his feet and explained what he said the context for this increased spending and breaching this 5% self-imposed limit was. The Fiscal Advisory Council had their say today, and it wasn't a very positive say.
No, and this seems to be kind of a regular thing now, I think, for government in terms of particularly that 5% spending breach. Pascal Donoghue was asked about it last night at that press conference. I was at it myself. I think he's getting a bit frustrated, I suppose, answering that question, saying, look, that he set the 5% spending rule back before COVID happened and before a cost of living crisis. So his defence is that, you know, he's had to breach that and that this couldn't have been, you know, foreseen. And he's, you know, also pointing to things that they're putting money away for rainy day while some of the opposition want to spend all the money at once. But, you know, there is still that narrative going around from this budget that, you know, Pascal was perhaps described as the prudent one, and now it's perhaps shifted to a bit more party Pascal in terms of the spending, right, and the money that's being dished out.
Party Pascal and Jaunty Jack, the double act spending the money, Paul McAuliffe. I, you know, what the Fiscal Advisory Council had to say when, shortly after, I suppose, Fianna Fáil was kicked out of office in 2011, Micheál Martin went about rehabilitating the party. And part of that rehabilitation was apologising for the mistakes of the past. In 2011, he said the government spent too much and eroded the tax base too much. That was 2011. 2012, at the Ardèche, he said, we were in government, we should have acted differently on the same subject. 2013, speaking to the press about social partnership and how money decisions were made at the time, he said there was too much expenditure and too much reduction of tax at the time. And here's the Fiscal Advisory Council back in 2024 saying the same is happening all over again.
Well, they said we're at risk of the same happening all over again. Look, I think the key difference is the demographic and the population increase. And in order to meet the public service demands, in order to meet the very real and understandable expectations that people have, we have to spend more money. But we're not, I don't believe, recklessly spending money, because we're very prudently putting money aside into two separate funds that will allow us to continue invest in infrastructure, for example, when corporation tax aren't at the level that they are. And it's very important that people understand that, you know, a huge chunk of our corporation tax is coming from a very small number of companies, and we are not spending that, and that is being put aside. Richard and perhaps Mally will spend far more than we are spending.
We'll get to them in a moment, but the money you're talking about, for a start, there was a pension reserve fund at the time, back in the boomy days of the Celtic Tiger, that was being put aside, that ended up being spent not on what the country thought it was going to be spent on, but notwithstanding all that, as you say, the money that's been put aside is there for infrastructure and capital projects. Now, if there's a downturn, what's going to pay for current expenditure? That's what the USC was introduced for, to have a broad enough tax base to cover current expenditure. And now, in every single budget, it's been slashed at and been described as the hated USC.
Well, look, and the opposition have said that they will abolish the USC and that will completely erode that stream of income. I think the government has been responsible. I think if you look back to 2019, there's now 500,000 people more working in the economy than there was at 2019 when we came into government. We have managed the economy well. There's been two big risks in terms of the war in Ukraine, in terms of COVID. On both occasions, we rightly funded industry, retail, and many others to try and support jobs. And by and large, we have kept that and grown the number of people working. And that has brought in... The big story yesterday, of course, was about how we spent the 100 billion euro. But actually, what's not ever talked about is how we managed that, how we created the environment. And I would argue that the opposition are not best placed to continue that sort of economic growth, and that we are. And the proof of the pudding has been the 5 years when we have done that.
All right, Richard Boyd-Barrett, Paul McAuliffe is effectively saying you're only able to abolish or propose the abolition of USC for all those earning under 100,000 euro because the government has handed an economy over in such good stead at this point in its life.
Well, I mean, you got to be kidding. I mean, we've got the worst housing crisis in the history of the state. Our health service is in absolute disarray. We've nearly a million people living in or close to the poverty line. We've got absolute crisis in the provision of special needs supports and teachers. I mean, the list can go on, right?
How would cutting USC help any of that?
Because working people are really struggling to pay the bills, right? That's the reality. Ordinary workers are really struggling. The USC was not brought in to broaden the tax base. It was brought in as an austerity emergency tax to pay for the crimes of the bankers and the developers. Now, what's different about People Before Profits' proposal to anybody else, including the government or any of the opposition, in terms of getting rid of the USC for everybody under 90,000 a year, is we pay for it by raising taxes on the very wealthy, right? So we don't just rely on windfall, because it would be folly to just rely on windfall gains. We propose a wealth tax, as Oxfam and others have done, that would raise billions. A small tax on the multimillionaires in this country. We propose things like a financial transaction tax on the trillions, literally trillions, of share trading and so on that go on in the financial services centre, and we propose higher rates of tax.
I don't think you're alone on that, because Matty McGrath, you wanted to increase the taxation burden on people over 150,000. Is it to pay for USC cuts for people below what level? Below 150, below 70,000, is it?
I mean, you quoted there to Paul about Fianna Fáil, where Micheál Martin said apologise for the reckless way they behaved. And like, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting to get a different result. This is a stupid budget, really. Awash with money, they tell us. But it's so vulnerable, especially with the Middle East and with the election in America, what might happen if Donald Trump comes back in. So it's so volatile, that money is so fickle, and it's great to have it, but it's fickle. There's many areas then that could have been dealt with. The stamp duty, they flew a kite there on the big foreign investors that are buying up 40% of our houses, which is right with the worst housing crisis ever. And we have different measures and measures and talks about measures of fixing it, but we can't get the house
but
built.
But you want tax cuts too. You want to scrap USC for people below 70,000.
I do because Board
and you want to scrap carbon tax.
Because Board Fianna Fáil, I'm fundamentally opposed to carbon tax, but Board Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael promised they were going to scrap in the last election manifestos and the one before. They're going to scrap a temporary little arrangement. They're going to scrap it and should have any credibility with the electorate. Okay, they're 1% off of it. But I mean, that's a punitive tax on people. As Richard said, it was put on as an austerity measure. It's supposed to be temporary, like the insurance levy, which they've removed finally after all the decades. But there's no measure in place to stop the insurance companies from rising the same price up again. So this is the problem.
Manny, that's why
government will not tackle the big.
In the last 2 years, we have reduced
I didn't interrupt you.
Right. We've reduced that.
All right, I'll let you back in a second.
I'm just saying the government refused to tackle big business. The same with the pyrite. They didn't tackle the big quarry owners. Right. There's many ways, but these are untouchable. They should have put a 50% stamp duty. I want it on. Farmers, conglomerates will buy land over 500 acres. And also, if people aren't from Ireland and haven't a valid reason to be here as a business or whatever and haven't lived here for 5 years, they shouldn't be allowed to buy these houses. 40% of the badly needed houses that we're struggling to get tradesmen to build them, and they've been bought up by these people, put them totally out of the reach of Irish families and Irish young couples and whatever else, and people who are working here, not from Ireland.
Right.
They might need to get housing. So it's madness.
Well, let's take that specific measure, Paul McAuliffe, the stamp duty measure, the hike in stamp duty that was designed to deal with investment funds buying up more than 5 to 10 houses.
Yeah, and I suppose there has been an increase from 10 to 15%, but it's not the only measure. The key measure that the government made in this area was 2 years ago when we introduced the owner-occupied guarantee, which gives local authorities the ability when they pass a planning to prevent the bulk purchase of a estate. And that measure is saving thousands of homes from being purchased by
right.
bulk purchase.
So what's the ambition from where we are now to where you want to get to with that?
Well, look, as I said, there has been an increase. Like when you look at the numbers actually are quite small. And what we want to do is have a public housing program where we've built nearly 116,000 homes since we've came into government. Many of them are public homes, new homes, both for social housing, but also the new cost rental that's available. There's no doubt that this government has invested very heavily, $6 billion alone next year in housing.
But before I go back to Richard Boyd Barrett and Matty McGrath, this. The spending that was unveiled on social housing talked about 10,000 social houses. Now, that target has not been revised upwards. If social housing was really a priority, why weren't those targets revised in time for the budget with a price tag attached?
Well, look, the targets are going to be revised in the autumn. The minister has said that will be the case, and we will get those figures.
And why weren't they ready for the budget is the question.
Well, that's a matter for the department. I don't know the technical reason for why they're not ready, but they will be published in the autumn, and they will be more ambitious. They will be more ambitious. But let's be clear: we are building more public homes than we have ever done since the 1970s. Huge numbers of public homes are being built. Not enough. We need to build far more. As I say, we've built 116,000 homes in only 4 years. Like, if you look, when we came into government, there was 20,000 homes being built a year. Now we're at nearly 40,000.
Right.
The government is building more homes.
Well, the 20 to 40,000, they're being built by private developers. The direct build of homes by local authorities and the like is a different figure.
And it is up to...
Sure.
And it
is okay. Richard Boyd Barrett, you were critical of...
I was gobsmacked, to be honest. And let's be clear, the Apple money can be used on capital expenditure. Using windfall for current without having ways to cover it in the future is problematic.
Right, do you accept that couldn't that be done? Could you accept that couldn't be just done in the morning with the labour force that's in place at the moment? If you were to put huge amounts of money into the limited labour force that's currently there at the moment, the only thing that would happen would be a repeat of the children's hospital, the hut outside the Department of Finance and the bike shed.
They absolutely need to take dramatic action to ramp up the capacity of the construction sector. And that's why we proposed that some of the Apple money should have been used for seed capital for a state construction company. Because even the private sector have acknowledged that they don't have the capacity to ramp up the level of construction that we need to meet what the Housing Commission now are saying is double what the government are proposing. right? We need double. We need 60 to 70,000 houses a year. The government are delivering about 35 or 36.
Right, but right? Would a state construction company be able to magic up the workers, or would they be trying?
No, they wouldn't be able to magic them up.
Would they be recruiting them from the private developers who say the capacity isn't there? It's the same number of workers at the end of the day.
First of all, part of the problem with the existing construction sector is scale. Right, that we've got lots of small builders, but they and of course small builders can often do very good work. But if you're going to deliver big social and affordable housing developments, you need companies of scale, and we don't have them. Right, so the state is going to have to fill that gap, and it also part of such a state construction company would be going out taking on thousands of apprentices, training them up, and as soon as an apprentice, if you pay them properly, right, as soon as an apprentice starts training, they're also working on site, right? So you can begin to...
Well, the issue with apprentices isn't working on site. There would have to be mass funding to increase the number of college hours they can get off site to actually get their qualification, which is a problem at the moment.
Which is also in our budget column.
Matty McGrath,
what's
the Rural Independent's big idea to make inroads into the construction of social housing to alleviate the situation there?
But as I said, the first place, and we had an opportunity to do it in stamp duty, Paul said it's not much. It's 40% of the house we build have been bought by these. There's an increase of 223%. That's the figures that have increased in this bulk buying. And we're not doing anything to stop it. I mean, we have a huge problem getting mass scale and getting workers and getting and taking the workers from the private to the public sector. They're just not there. But why would we allow them of those scarce resources when we had an opportunity?
All right, well, what's your idea, I suppose? You know, the government target at the moment is 10,000. Paul McAuliffe says it's going to go upwards. What's your target and what's your idea for delivering
it? My target is a seismic change of policy.
I know, how much? How many houses? How many housing units?
As I said, we're leaking 40% of them, so it's nonsense to start from that basis. So we're leaking 40% of the houses to these big companies. So why? How are you ever going to catch up with numbers if that's happening?
And that's the bulk buying of private homes. But in terms of social homes, what's your target and what do you want to spend on it?
I'm not going to make promises. I'm just making the point that we need to clear the sites, cut out the red tape. We need to allow planning. Like most villages in rural Ireland cannot build a house. You're not allowed to build them private people on private land won't get planning. You can't build in the villages because the infrastructure, i.e. this capacity in the wastewater is not there, so you can't build.
I want to move on. I want to move on to another
issue. So it can't be done. That's my point.
You'll want to come back into the next issue I'm going to raise there. Christina Finn, the hospitality, the VAT rate for the hospitality sector staying at 13%, not being cut to 9%, has been a pretty contentious issue. People in that sector feel their expectations were raised ahead of time. Government may deny that, but there were certainly voices within the government calling for this, and people were maybe a little surprised that it was a flat rejection of it.
Yeah, well, there's been call for this for quite some time from the hospitality sector, and Pascal Donoghue has repeatedly been asked over the last number of months about it, and he has been pretty firm in terms of saying that it wasn't for him. He didn't think his department could sign off on it. We had some tax papers come out before the budget saying that it was going to be a huge amount of money. There was discussion about decoupling the VAT rate between hotels and restaurants because there's a real issue there about the prices of hotels. We've seen it when there's been big events like, you know, Taylor Swift and rugby games and all the rest, and the Oasis concert, and hotel rooms just skyrocketing in and around the city. And people, I think, are rightly questioning why, you know, big hotel groups would get any sort of break when it comes to the budget. But on the flip side of that, there's the small and medium businesses, the restaurants, the cafes, who I'm sure have spoken to TDs here because it's something that I think most TDs would have been spoken about. So Enterprise Minister Peter Burke did seem to put out some sort of flag or push publicly that this is what he wanted, and it's not what came about at the end of the day. And I just don't think, you know, perhaps enough in terms of business supports, particularly for those small and medium businesses, was there in this budget. And, you know, we've seen continually, you know, we've seen nearly weekly people speak about well-known restaurants. I think Micheál Martin was tweeting about this chipper down in Cork that's been there for nearly 100 years, saying it was devastating that it had to close. I think everybody will know of some sort of restaurant or cafe in their town or village that has shut up shop at this point. So I just think there is a bit of a void in terms of any creative thinking about how to stop, I suppose, that trend of closures.
Paul McAuliffe, any government TD who holds their clinic in a pub might be in for a frosty atmosphere when they next show up. How are you going to explain that particular move to people who are approaching you about it?
Yeah, and I think Christine is right. I think there was very strong indications from government that there would not be a move on this, and has been for the last 12 months. I think many TDs across all parties in the House were seeing what we could do for people, particularly in the hospitality sector. Look, the reality is that a change of this size would be, you know, very, very significant. I saw a figure of 500 million. And I suppose then...
We've seen figures of even more, I think up to 700 million.
And what we haven't talked about is actually all of the really positive measures in the budget yesterday. And the question is, would they have been able to have happen if we had implemented the 9% VAT? And I'm thinking, for example, the huge increase in eligibility for carers allowance, which means a couple earning up to €65,000 a year now, one person will be able to get the full carers rate. What we've done in terms of the free school book scheme now for every level child.
Not giving a double child benefit payment to absolutely everybody in the country and targeting that measure would have also allowed you to do that.
To be fair, we have both targeted and universal supports. For example, we made a €100 payment for the...
Let's just stick to the VAT rate. What will you be saying to business owners?
Both are connected, because we can't do all of the positive measures, the 2,700 special education places that are going to be created, the more SNAs, all of those things wouldn't have been possible if we had made the change on VAT. But what we have done is we haven't done nothing to support business. We've introduced the power-up support grant. It will be paid to those people who received the rates rebate earlier in the
this
year.
This is a €4,000 grant.
Yeah, and that will go. And look, let's be clear. This is public money that's been allocated to businesses to support the jobs in that area. Okay. And it is a very difficult environment.
I want to go to Richard Boyd.
Can I make one last point?
Very briefly.
By government reducing the taxes that we cut, and we have reduced USC and so on, that means gives more money that's left in people's pockets and gives them additional spending power. And that goes back into the economy as well. So there's different ways that we can support business.
All right, Richard Boyd Barrett, the VAT rate, reducing it from 13% to 9%. Did you support that proposal in the first instance, or what would you have done for small, struggling businesses?
I do fully accept that many, many small businesses are seriously struggling, but I'm not sure this is the way to address the problem. I mean, first of all, a lot of businesses will tell you that there's lots of people coming in, but the costs, other costs, right? And if people are coming in, it's not the price that is the issue. It's other costs that they're carrying. And I would rather use the large amount of money it would cost to reduce it down to 9%.
Right, but the energy, the VAT on energy did stay at 9%, which is a huge input cost into these businesses. So what else would you have done, and how would you
The big one we would propose is to change the rates system, the commercial rate system, completely, right? So that it would be based on profitability and turnover rather than on the size of your premises. I mean, to me, if you take, you know, a big multinational chain that might have a relatively modest premises, is saying that paying the same level of rates or maybe less than a small restaurant that is completely independent, or a small coffee shop that is completely independent and could be struggling to survive, right? So it's not, we need a progressive rate system that is based on profitability and turnover, so they get a serious break on rates in order to make them sustainable, whereas the people who are highly profitable pay a proper rates contribution.
Okay. Matty McGrath, you did support the cut on the rate of VAT from 13.5% down to 9%. Bearing in mind that the first time this was done, it was financed by a raid on people's pensions. Would you have been willing to pay €700 million that could have been spent elsewhere on this particular measure?
A little bit of imagination, Colm. Listen, the tourism and hospitality sector employs approximately 270,000 people. But wait for it. Many of whom are based outside Dublin, with 69% of the industry located in rural Ireland. So this is the problem. They are located in rural Ireland. And let me be honest and say, there's pubs in Dublin struggling, and the hospitality are struggling as well. But the big hotels should have been separated, because they brought it to a copy book when they got benefit before, they didn't pass it on. So the difference now here is there's no imagination in this budget, because any of the people drawing up this budget were never self-employed, or owned a pub, or owned a bar, or owned a business, an outlet for food, with all the different regulations and the different costs. We also have the minimum wage going up, and we have the auto enrolment coming in a couple of months' time.
Just to be
more
clear, are you saying you don't support auto enrolment, which has been deferred until September, or you don't support the increase in the minimum wage?
I'm a small business owner myself. My wife and my son and I kind of a business with 25 people working. My wife does the books. It's an onerous task to do the book with all the different schemes and regulations that are coming in. And remember, Paul talked about the rebate for the rates. I have a hotel in the town in Tipperary who applied for that and they needed it and they got the 5,000 of a grant for the rates. They had to be paying rates of under 30,000. And they were when they found out the figures, the rates were 30,220. 220 euro over, and they had to repay the money. And they're losing out on this one again. So there surely should be some kind of incremental scale that you don't just hit a line and you fail, because that's not an awful lot that's not a lot of money, but it's a help. So we need to be imaginative here. What's going to happen now is two choices, and they're closing by the half hours, we know, and the last 6-8 months. They have choices now to close. I'm not saying the change in the bet would keep them on, but it'll help them along the way. And a bit of understanding. They have two choices, to close or short time. If they go on short time, their staff, the Department of Social Protection are going to have to pick up the tab. So the figures that you've been quoting is not correct. So we're going to lose huge leakage.
I'll put this question to all of you. There was also, as angry as the hospitality sector are, there was also anger on the part of the public that an enormous amount of money was spent on the VAT cut and people didn't feel that it was passed on to them as consumers. So what's your answer to that, Michael?
Yeah, but that happens to the hotels, especially hotel sector, not only in Dublin, but mainly in Dublin, but the ordinary pubs. And listen, the pub culture has changed. People aren't going in anyway, so they are struggling. In any case, the whole drinking culture has changed utterly. And, you know, pubs I know in towns that were doing a reasonable business, they're not doing it anymore. So the second problem then is the footfall. In places, because tourists like Killarney, I stay out in Braytree. The hotels are taken over by Christina Woodall area, are taken over by refugees for Ukrainian refugees.
There's a texter actually in from Killarney says the government is absolutely right not to reduce their VAT rate on hospitality down to 9%. I live in Killarney and I can tell you that businesses, not just hotels, are price gouging. This is the view of that particular listener. He said the markup on a scone is insanity.
Yeah,
Richard Boyd Barrett.
In some places, but not ordinary places, no. So the footfall, it's gone from these towns and centres, so the business is down anyway. Right. So as I said, there's going to be huge leakage when they do the sums.
I want to go back to Richard Boyd Barrett on that.
The fact is, when they had the lower VAT rate, prices didn't go down. In fact, in some cases, they went up.
Yeah,
they did. That's just a fact.
They went down a lot of business.
Okay, Matty, you've had your point. They didn't. They went up by and large. Of course, maybe some passed it on, but vast majority did not pass it on. So I think we need more targeted supports to genuinely help people that are struggling. It is interesting that the one that you mentioned, Christina, the business in Cork, that closed down. Mm. Well, the first thing he said is, no, we've loads of customers coming in. Mm. So the problem wasn't the customers coming in, it's other costs, which begs the question, really, is VAT the issue?
I think the
small business would be better off breaking the sort of link with the big businesses that are lobbying for this because they just want to make more money and they're making loads of money, and actually campaign for targeted supports to help them reduce costs without banging up prices or, for that matter, putting pressure on wages of workers.
Look, and one good example of that was last year, obviously, there was money made available for retail units to have more energy-efficient fridges, for example, and that, as a result, helped reduce energy costs. So I think the 9% was about increasing demand for the product, for restaurants and so on. I think there's other ways that we can support business, and one of them is the grant that will be available later in the year.
All right. Christina, you mentioned an issue that was a bone of contention today, and this was the issue of these pouches for mobile phones. It blew up today anyway. Walk us through what happened.
Yeah, so obviously the breakdown of the education budget expenditure was in the document yesterday, and there was a lot of queries going in about what this 9 million euro was for the school, the phone free school initiative that Norma Foley and Fianna Fáil have been promoting over the last number of months. And Norma Foley was, you know, kind of questioned on this extensively in the press conference this morning, and there isn't, I suppose, a clear-cut answer of exactly the breakdown of the entire 9 million. It is to go to, like, every school to help them with storage units, but there isn't any, I suppose, definitive answer about what they might be. You know, there's already things like those pouches. People probably remember them, even if they've gone to concerts and comedy gigs in particular, where they're told to put their phones into these cases and they're locked away. Is that going to be an initiative? Is there lockers perhaps that children will be asked to put their phone into? But it has blown up a bit today from, you know, teachers in particular, who are saying there's lots of other things that the schools and the education system need at the moment, and just a big question mark over this is whether this is the right way to spend it. And it is an issue, in fairness, that I think since Norma Foley has spoken a lot about it, that has divided people. I think people understand, like from my own perspective, you know, when I grew up as a teenager, I probably wouldn't have had, you know, the internet on my phone. The research there in terms of bullying online.
I didn't even have the internet in my head at that stage.
Yeah. But, you know, the impact, I can't even imagine having, if you were bullied in school, and having it in your pocket 24/7. So I can 100% see the merit behind it. And I think anything to promote less use of phones from children and teenagers should be advocated for. I just don't know whether they've hit the mark here. That seems to be a bit of a divisive one for some people.
All right. Paul McAuliffe, the principal of an Educate Together in Carlow, Simon Lewis, took to social media earlier in a tweet, said, instead of spending 9 million on phone pouches, it could be spent on any of the following: 273 SNAs, 180 teachers, 167 speech and language therapists, 160 occupational therapists, 112 educational psychologists. It's hard to argue against that, isn't it?
Actually, I disagree. Like, first of all, let's say, I think the big issue for many principals is the capitation grant, and trying to meet, in the same way we're talking about the cost of doing business, schools have to run their schools and they have energy costs and so on. There was a 20 million additional allocation last year, another 10 this year, 12% increase. That's 30 million over those 2 years. I still think that we could do more on capitation. I think there's many schools that need support, and I think the department could work better. Like, the 9 million for the pouches, actually, I have a sort of personal experience of this. My own...
Can you clarify that, by the way?
Yeah,
is it for pouches?
Well, look, so basically in my own child, one of my children's school, they're in secondary school, this Yonder pouch was purchased at the beginning of the year. We paid for it as part of the stationery stuff that you buy.
How much was it?
Well, I don't have the individual price because it was paid as part of the package for notebooks and things like that, because we didn't have a free book scheme, but we do have that now for second level. And they go in, the case locks, they don't have the pressure of the phone all day, and when they leave the school, they can take it out, they can get the bus, they can ring their parents, they can go to sports club. Like, you have to ask yourself the question, the direct impact of mental health and the use of social media, phone, bullying in schools,
right.
and we're saying that 9 million euro and that price and the impact it has on children, that's a waste of money. I cannot believe that
money
that's,
well
that's
spent,
the story
Martin
after, after the budget.
There's 166 phones could be deployed in a building not far from here. 166 pouches could be deployed to stop people going on their phones during business.
And what would you, Danny, I don't know what we do with Danny. He raised phone. We'd have to get a steel case for concrete.
He's not here to defend himself.
He knows
a thing or two about construction. Maybe he could build that case himself.
He sure does. But no, look, again, that principal from Cal or wherever, rang it, he did right. I mean, this is a fancy, but Norma Foley has mentioned about this, in fairness. And anyone denied us the problem in schools, it'd be in their heads in the sand. But I'm friendly with a number of principals of schools, secondary schools. I sat on board of management, so these things aren't discussed at all. So you're turning the teachers into police people now. Like, this is a parental and guardian's issue to try and take the phones off of them. I mean, I see kids in the back.
So do you not think primary schools should try and implement a smartphone ban?
I do, of course I do. When I see children in the backs of cars of 2 years of age and babysitters looking at big screens, I mean, it's a huge problem. But the teacher shouldn't be asked to police it. We have to put more.
Who should be asked to police it?
The parents and guardians.
But they're not in school with them.
Sorry?
They're not in school.
No, at home, first of all, and the way it's gone, they give them the phones, obviously, they buy them from them. I'm making the point that it's a big issue and has to have more thought than just throwing 9 million at it, just like that. I mean, teachers and board principals especially get very annoyed with all these. Oh, tell the school to this, tell the school to this. Schools are busy places right now, the curriculum is expanding. They can't do everything.
All right, Richard Boyd Barrett, pupils are being protected by these pouches being built. Maybe it's too early to criticise it. Maybe these will show dividends in time to come in the form of improved student mental health.
I think it's pretty ridiculous, and I agree completely with Simon Lewis. He's someone who I seek advice from when it comes to like what's happening in the schools in terms of the provision of special education teachers or SNAs, or even looking at our own alternative budget for 16 million, just slightly more, you could double the number of psychologist posts in NEPS. Sorry, increase it by 50%, right? And for 16 million. So you just think about, like, if we had, say, psychologists in schools, which is what I think we should have, a psychologist in every single school. If you reduce the pupil-teacher ratio, if you had more special education teachers, that would do far more to assist our young people with their mental health issues, with the kind of one-to-one interactions that they need to kind of deal right. with some of those mental health issues, rather than thinking right. you're going to solve the problem by locking them in.
Have your cake and eat it stuff. Like, so is Richard saying that that parents should pay for these storage devices? Is that what you're suggesting? Or are you saying that we should do nothing about phones at all? Or are you saying that somebody else other than the Department of Education should pay? This is 9 million in a budget of nearly 11.8 billion. Like, this is a very small amount of money to protect the mental health of children across. We all know bullying is a massive issue. To remove the phones, devices for the best part of the day in a school from young children, I think is a really positive measure, and it's a fragment of the amount of money. And by the way, Richard, you're comparing it. There's 18 million additional 18 million going on SNAs. There's 15 on special education needs teachers. There's 52 on the school transport scheme. There's 51 on school books scheme.
First of all, it's a fraction of what is needed, but I'll tell you what I'd like to do is see the government actually impose some serious taxes on those social media companies.
Where would you put the phones?
To be honest, I mean, I would like to see more regulation of the social media companies rather than the idea of that we're going to take the phones away and that's going to solve all the problems, right? I think, to be honest, we need to regulate those social media companies and we need to tax the hell out of them and use some of that money to fund more.
All right. So if you got the money off the social media company, would you spend 9 million of it on phone pouches?
I don't think so. No, it certainly wouldn't come to mind.
Okay, Marty McGrath.
Richard, you get the parents to pay for it, would you?
Sorry?
Marty McGrath, you want to come in on that. On the pouches
we're
issue there.
You're removing all voluntary contributions. And paying for it.
And the pouches. Look, it's not a basic issue. It's just a figure plucked out of the sky without any consultation with the principals associations or the teachers. You know, it's just a trying to force the issue on them. It's a huge issue. Has to be examined thoroughly and debated. What's going to stop the kids going in, the teenagers going in with two phones? Give up the daughters and keep the one with them. And this is going to happen. They're creative about this. Listen, things have moved on. We were creative going to school, buying the cigarette for a penny or whatever at the time. So they've got more creative now, so they can hand up an old phone or whatever and keep their own phone. Turn 9 million, it's a fanciful idea that Minister Foley has got about this. She'd be far more better off looking at the curriculum and what's creeping into the curriculum in education and in SPHE and everything else. It's shocking what's going on, but this is a nice distraction.
Christina Finn, for this to take off as one of the biggest bones of contention out of this budget, does it say a lot about how hard it was to find ammunition, maybe?
Yeah, I think it was a difficult one for the opposition because, look, there's no doubt about it that people like to get money in their pockets. Like, no one's going to say no to extra money coming at them before Christmas, whether you like it or not. So I think the opposition did have a bit of a difficult pushback against government because, like, how are you going to get up and say, actually, families that are struggling and at the moment in cost of living shouldn't get those payments? So I think it was a difficult narrative for them to walk. But I think there definitely are holes to poke in the government, given in this budget, given that it is such a huge amount of money. And particularly, as we've mentioned, the housing issue, you know, a number one priority that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are saying. And again, nothing that you can really hammer home as a big idea, you know, a big new idea of how we're going to actually make a difference here. The Housing for All, we've been told, is working. You know, it's an old plan. Like, when
it's 3 years old, Christine.
Exactly. So, you know, to move along.
But, like, the idea that we would come up with new ideas every year and wait every year for a budget. We've put in place a multi-annual budget. Like the whole idea of having
ideas based on evidence. And with this over 14,000 people who are on the homeless list, maybe it's time for new ideas.
Yeah. No, if you look at Housing for All, I believe housing. Look, the solution to the housing crisis is supply. And if you look at Housing for All,
I believe,
with respect, I believe that supply is the answer. And there's almost every aspect of supply is being addressed in Housing for All. It's a multi-annual budget. So the idea then to wait every year for the annual budget just defeats the purpose.
In any business, if you have a plan and it's 3 years old and it's not, and there's things that aren't working in it, you pivot the targets and you move with the times. And second of all, in terms of this argument that constantly we're being told about supply, in the boom times we had one of the biggest supply of houses and the cost of the houses did not go down, and we're seeing supply go up, given that is a fact in terms of delivery. But in terms of affordability, like even with the Shangana houses that were launched last week, you know, Matthew said there that I'm from the Bray area, lived out in Navan, now live in Dunleary myself. You know, those sort of schemes are interesting to people like in their 20s and 30s, but calling them affordable housing when you're talking about going up into the 400,000 mark, that's not affordable to many, many people.
Okay. You only own 70% of the house when you pay that.
Yeah, so I just think, you know, when we're talking about the Housing for All initiatives, the new housing targets that are coming out, I think people want to see big ideas and they want to see a pivot.
Big ideas are in Housing for All and they are delivering.
Okay, we got to take a break. We're going to have a look at issues in health that came up with the Oireachtas Health Committee earlier, specifically staffing levels there.
The Late Debate with Cullum O'Mungon on RTE Radio 1.